We began yesterday an analysis of the sugya of raw meat, or salted meat, raw fish, and that's a sugya in Shabbos Daf Kuf Chaf Ches, and you'll see that in your pages on the bottom of page 2, if you have that. So let's just quickly review what we know. We just started it, Mamash is second. What we know is that there's a distinction between meat and fish. And we're more machmir in which case?
Fish,
correct? So we're going to be more makil in meat than in fish. And the reason for this, and we're going to focus our attention on the first teretz of Tosfos, the first explanation of Tosfos. This is Tosfos on Daf Kuf Chaf Ches. Dibra Maskel Dag Tofel. Tosfos says that Dag Tofel Eino Roi Leklovim. Okay, as I pointed out yesterday, we're not going to get into the Metzius issue here. That's not for me. I'm not an expert on this. And the question was raised yesterday, if society, you know, if contemporary society is a little different than Chazal's time, it would be Roy Leklovim. If it wouldn't be, you know, Dag Tofel would be Mutter B'Tiltil. But Tosfos is assuming now that Dag Tofel Eino Roy Leklovim, which basically means that if you offer Dag Tofel to a dog, he will refuse it, he'll turn it down. It's hard to believe, but he'll turn it down. The implication is that in the case of Basar Tofel, if you offer it to a canine, you know, he will take advantage of it. And although we know certain chayos, like lions and so forth, that eat meat, we didn't know that dogs belong to that category, but Tosfos says that a dog would eat raw meat. That's the first teretz of Tosfos. Now, if you turn to your page 3, and this is where we ended it yesterday, or day before yesterday, I should say, right? Rabbi Kiva Eger, which is the third source on your page 3, puts forward the following claim, that the opinion of Rashi is identical with the opinion of the first teretz in Tosfos. We haven't reviewed yet the second teretz in Tosfos. The second teretz in Tosfos, you remember, requires not just roi lachilas kelev, but omed lachilas kelev. Okay, we'll talk about that distinction. But be that as it may, the first teretz of Tosfos says it's roi lachilas kelev, that removes the isur tiltul, and Rabbi Kivega claims that Rashi is of the same opinion. Now, where is that Rashi? So that Rashi is the Rashi on the top of your page 3 in Shabbos Daf Mem Hei Amud Beis, Dibra Maskel De Isbei Beitzas Efroach. And Rashi tells us that in the case of Beitzas Efroach, the reason why there's an Isur Tiltul is because of the Klipa. So if you're on page 3, this is the fourth line down from the top of the page. Evan, you see that? Do you see where Rashi says v'kelov lo achale mishum klipa? And Rabbi Kivega, you don't have that, so please underline that. Rabbi Kivega makes a big deal about this in the paragraph that starts Rabbi Kivega. You'll see four lines down. He says in the middle of the fourth line, v'chein nirali l'dayek bedas Rashi umilshono, and so too I want to read Rashi carefully and his language in Perek Kira. Daf Mem Hei Amud Beis Dibra Maskel De Isbei Beitzas Efroach, and therefore Rashi would suggest that the reason why the kelev won't eat this efroach is because there's a barrier that, shall we say, prevents him from getting access to this efroach, and that is the klipa that surrounds it. Rabbi Kveger apparently derives from Rashi by inference that if there would not be a klipa, then there would be, number one, accessibility and ability for a kelev, and number two, therefore, there would be no isur mut. So clearly, says Rabbi Kveger, we should identify Rashi with Shitas Tosus, that any foodstuff that you and I would not eat, but the kelev would eat, again, as long as there's no barrier like a klipa preventing the kelev from eating it, but if the kelev would eat it despite the klipa, then it would not be mukta, and that's the sheet of both Rashi, according to Rabbi Kveger, and Tosus in the first opinion of Tosus. The Pnei Yehoshua is not excited about this, because the Pnei Yehoshua finds a different Rashi. And it's very fascinating, you know, when we do this research and you look over all the Rashis and Shas. Rashi and Beitza on Davav Amid Aleph, and you'll see that here on page 3, right before the Pnei Yehoshua, Rashi says, Efroch b'klipa, eino omeid l'achilas klov. Please emphasize the word omeid. The Pnei Yehoshua says that eino omeid l'achilas klovim gives us a whole different impression. And that is that whether or not it's mukta is determined, according to this Rashi, not by whether it's roi l'achilas kelev, but rather whether it's omeid l'achilas kelev. Now, in order to explain the difference between omeid l'achilas kelev and roi l'achilas kelev, which are two distinct categories according to the Pnei Yehoshua, we turn back to Tosfos that we started with on page 2, the Tosfos on Kuf Chav Ches, and Tosfos has an inami. And in Tosfos's inami, he claims the following, that the difference between fish and meat is that although both are roi l'achilas kelev, meaning in the second day of Tosfos, again the Metzius changes now, and if you offer raw fish to a dog, he will in fact eat it, but it's not omeid, it's not machal klovim, meaning if you had a list that would include, enumerate the diet, you know, the diet of a dog, you know, the daily diet of a dog, then fish would not be on the list, at least not raw fish. I'm sorry. Yeah, and that's called eino omeid l'achilas klovim. But if you were to offer that raw fish to a dog, according to Tosfos's second answer, he would in fact eat it. But it's not what's normally fed to a dog. It's not a staple. Excellent. I like that word. Go ahead.
Why does Tosfos use the word machlchayim?
No, because Tosfos.
Anything could be machlchayim.
Tosfos admits that raw meat is not edible to a dog, but there's no gzeiros hakos of a dog. You know, the Torah says in the Parsha the Veil Akelav Tashlich, and also, and the Gemara has a whole discussion of Sufim, what schar did the dogs deserve? You know, Yechatz Kelav L'Shoina, that we feed them in the Veil. But this is not a separate halacha dogs because they were careful and on the Leil Yetzias Mitzrayim. We want to know if this food is edible for animals. And Tosfos says that although you wouldn't feed raw meat normally to a dog, but you would feed it to a chaya. And Tosfos says that in the case of a chaya, raw meat is called machal chaya. Again, we have to be very careful here. He's not defining raw meat as roi l'achilas behema. I'm going to use the word behema to mean all animals together, like it's like a generic term. Because if you were talking from the perspective of roi, there would be no justification to distinguish between fish and meat, because to the same extent that raw meat is roi l'behema, raw fish is also roi l'behema in the second teresitosis. So again, let's keep in mind, just to summarize. And again, if I had a blackboard, I would write this on the blackboard. The first Teretz in Tosfos, which we call Roman numeral number 1, which is identical, according to Rabbi Kveger, with Rashi in Kira Menhamin days, is that everything, you know, it's the issue of mukta in foods that are non-edible to human beings for human consumption, is the following issue. Is it edible to animals? Now, since there's a distinction made by the Gemara, by the Sugya, between fish and meat, we're going to have to say the fish is not edible to animals, and meat is edible to animals. That's Roman numeral number 1. Roman numeral number 2, which is the second Teretz in Tosfos, and we'll soon see that the that the Pnei Yoshua identifies Rashi with the second Teretz of Tosfos, not based on Rashi in Shabbos Mem Hei, but based on Rashi in Beitza or Davar. And that second Teretz of Tosfos says that whether it's Muktzah or not is not dependent upon whether it's edible to an animal, because in fact, even raw fish is edible to an animal, meaning the fish, the animal will not refuse to eat the fish. But we need more than that. We need that it be machel behemo. And when I say behemo, again, I mean in a generic sense. I don't care which animal you point out here. We're not giving any sky to the club. So Tosfos says that although raw fish is not, what was the word David used? It's not staple. It's not a dog staple. It's right. But raw fish is edible. Is edible to the dog, and if he's hungry enough, he won't refuse the fish, the raw fish. And kolshkein, how much more so, he won't refuse raw meat. But raw meat has one advantage, one up on raw fish, in that it is a staple for animals. Which animals? He calls them chayim, but again, that's irrelevant to us. Where does the Pnei Yoshua see Rashi identify with the second Teretz of Tosfos? Meaning, in order to remove mukta in food, it's not enough to tell me that it's edible to an animal, but you have to say that it is a staple for an animal. It's on his diet. Because Rashi says in Beitza, unlike in contrast to the Rashi in Shabbos, Efroach beklipa eino omeid lachilas klovin. So that Tosfos in the second Teretz, and Rashi here in Beitza, in order to achieve the goal of removing Mukta, require more than Roi Lachilus Kelev, they require that it be Omeid Lachilus Kelev. And the Pnei Yoshua points out that there's a contradiction here in Rashi. You know, if Tosfos offers two different Shittos, that's common, that's Maisa B'chol Yom. That's exactly what Tosfos does. Tosfos is a compilation of different Rishonim over the course of centuries. But to find two Rashis that contradict each other, that's a bit of an astonishing situation. Now, I wanted to learn with you an important comment of the Karban Asano. The Karban Asano belonged to a very, very... significant lineage of German rabbis. His name was Weil. So if anybody knows my friend Aryeh Weil, who lives in Ramot, he's a descendant of the Karban Asano. And the Karban Asano says the following. If you look at the Rush, the Karban Asano is a super commentary on the Rush. And the Rush I have for you on page 4, and the Rush is really built on the Gemara that we saw in Shabbos on Daf Mem Hei Amud Beis. You remember that Rabbi Shimon Bar Rebbe asked Rebbe, what would Rabbi Shimon hold about Patzilei D'Tamra? Okay, and at the end of the day, Rebbe responded that according to Rabbi Shimon, the only case of Muktzah and Ochlin is grogros v'tzimukim, and Rashi says, because it has two different negatives. Number one, grogros v'tzimukim is dacho b'yadayim, and number two, it's eno roi lachilo, whereas patzilei d'tamra doesn't have both of those elements. It may have one of those two elements in that it's not edible, because patzilei d'tamra, once you put these in a sal because they're unripened, it takes a while for the process to occur until it ripens. And it's not really royal achila until it ripens, but nevertheless you could eat it, and there isn't any dechia b'yadayim. So the Rush, if you take a look in Shabbos Perikira, that's Perik Gimel Simon Chaf Aleph, basically summarizes the halacha ki Rabbi Shimon. And therefore, he quotes the sentence here on the third line, Ki lesley Rav Shimon Eichad lo dachya b'yadayim, that in grogros v'tzimukim there was dachya b'yadayim. Or, for example, in the case of Shemen Shebenea, which Rabbi Shimon holds as muktzah because it's huktzah li suro, But in foodstuffs, ain Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel ain Muktzel Rav Shimon Ela Grogos V'Tzimukim Bilvad. And then if you drop down, Boy Minei Rav Shimon Rav Rebbe Patzili De Tamar Rav Shimon Ma'u Pirish Tmarim En El Kotim Kodim Zmanim V'Nosim Oso Bechoslos. This is a different word for the same concept, some sort of kli where the dates will mature, and they mature automatically, right, over a natural process. Omalei, and he answers him, this is Rebbe's answer in interpreting Rav Shimon, Ein Muktzel Rav Shimon El Grogos V'Tzimukim Bilvad, and underline the next few words, which is really Rashi, D'lo Havi Re'uyim V'Dachinu V'Yodayim. So the Tamrei, Patzili the Tamrei, is lacking that second element of Dachinu B'Yodayim. And here I want to read to you a one-liner in the Karban Asanel. He says the following. Dachya B'Yodayim L'chud Lo Avi Mukta. If I only have one element, I check off the requirement of Dachya B'Yodayim, that would not in and of itself engender Mukta. And he proves it from Chitin Shazar and Bekarka, where he planted the wheat in the ground, and therefore even though it's dachya v'yadayim, that's not enough, because we need the second condition has to be fulfilled in order to engender muktzah, namely that's ein roi l'achilo. And number two, in the next line, the Karban Asanel says v'ein ru'uyim l'chud lo avi muktzah, and even if you can check off one element, that it's ein roi, it's not tasty, it's not edible now in its present state as we enter into Shabbos, that would not engender muktzah. And the proof to that is patzili ditamrei came into lo nisbashlu einam ru'uyim is lahachi be'inin tartei ta'am. We need both. So just to summarize the Karban Asanel, which is really everything that we've been saying in Rashi, in order for Shimon to be modeh in and accept Muktzah B'Ochlin, and what's the classical case that Rav Shimon has in Muktzah B'Ochlin? Grogos V'Tzimukim. You need two conditions. It's got to be Dachi B'Yadayim and Eino Roy. In the case of Chitin Shazar B'Kaka, we have one condition, namely it's Dachi B'Yadayim, but it's not Eino Roy. In the case of Patzili the Tamar, it's Eino Roy because Olon is Bashlu called Tzarkon, but it wasn't Dachi B'Yadayim. And therefore, what we're left with by process of elimination is Grogos V'Tzimukim. Grogos V'Tzimukim is the only case of Muktzah B'Ochlin according to Rav Shimon, because it has both conditions.
Since Rav is not Dachi B'Yadayim,
not yet.
It looks similar.
Not yet. We're going to get to that in a minute. But right now, where we're holding now, based on the Rosh and the Karban Asanel, again, when I say the Rosh and the Karban Asanel, there's a difference of about six centuries in the middle there. But what I mean to say is the Karban Asanel explaining and elucidating the Rosh is that Patzili de Tamre, although it does check off as far as Ein Roi L'Achila, but there's no Dachi V'Yadayim. Now, I would like to suggest, O'Neill, based on your question, the following. It just is, if you pardon the pun here, it's food for thought. That what the Karban Asanel means about regarding Patzili de Tamre could be very similar to the Kolbo. If you remember the Kolbo, which is back on your page one, the Kolbo had a sugya in Beitza Chavav Amid Beis, going on to Chav Zayin Amid Aleph, and the Gemara over there, which is the first source on your page one, establishes that Gomro B'Yadayim. That Gomer B'Yadayim lo kami boilon. If it's Gomer B'Yadayim, that's not considered mukt. Ki kami boilon, but Gomer B'Yadayim Shamayim. So Gomer B'Yadayim Shamayim is your classical case of mukt. Let's just reiterate, based on the Mishnah Berura, what the Kolbo is saying. In the case where you soak dates in water, and the water is meant to absorb the taste of the dates and create some sort of date wine, the Kolbo says it looks like mukta, it might be mukta, there's a habamina that's mukta, but lamaskara, it's not mukta. And the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Gedolei Hachronim, the Gedolei Aposkim, to explain what was the back and forth, the shakla v'tari of the Kolbo. What the Kolbo thought was, in the Havamina, is that this case of pouring water onto the Tamarim, he calls it Tamarim Shenosnim Mayim Begigis, is called Dechia V'Yadayim. Why? Because when you pour the water, you are actively creating a situation in which immediately neither the water is tasty, is drinkable, because it's sour right now, it hasn't become wine yet, nor are the dates edible because they're already soaked with water. And therefore, the she'ela that was asked to the kolbo was a serious question, something that should be weighed seriously. Considered with all. Why? Because it's very similar to Grogos Vitzimukim. What happens to Grogos Vitzimukim? As a result of the sun beating down, it's now not edible. And Rav Shimon is molded in its mukta. That's how we paskin. Says the Kolbo name. That's a good Havamina, but it's wrong. Why? Because the case of Tmorim, Shinosinol of Mayim Begigis, is Goro Bidei Adam. Whereas the case of Grogos Vitzimukim is Gomer Bidei Shamayim. Says the Mishnah Berurah in the name of the Achronim, that came a century and more before him, that according to the Kolbo, what the Gemara in Beitza means by differentiating between Bidei Shamayim and Bidei Adam is the difference between Vados, meaning something that's absolutely predictable, as opposed to something that depends on a contingency that's out of my control, that's unpredictable. Why is Grogos Vitzimukim classified as Gomer Bidei Shamayim? Because it might be a cloudy day. And you go to the weather, you know, the weather reports, you Google it, and they tell you this, and they tell you that, and I don't know, I don't want to exaggerate, but a large percentage of the time they're wrong. And certainly if it's a long-term forecast. So what we have here is a Goro Bidei Shamayim and Grogos Vitzimukim because of the unknown, the inability to predict what's going to happen. In the case of Tmarim Shenustal of Mayim Begigis, on the other hand, we have Goro Bidei Adam because it's Vados, it's absolutely predictable. We can scientifically tell you when the process is going to reach its fruition and you have date wine and you can drink it and enjoy it. And therefore there's no mukta. I just want to add one line and then Evan, the floor is yours. It could be, that's what I want to throw out, you know, food for thought, that in the case of Patsile de Tamre, even if I grant you that in this middle stage, before the Tvarim ripened, because again he plucked them off the tree before they matured, nevertheless, when he puts it in these chalzos in the sal, it's already considered gomro bidei adam because there's no contingency. Because the scientists and the agriculturalists can already predict when you'll be able to taste the patsilu d'tam. That's one way of learning. Evan?
The solution doesn't seem to fit the question, which is if they're dechia at a certain point and they're like barogos because they're dechia. How does certainty fix the dechia?
Because dechia means asich adaitim, correct? So, for example, if we go back to the sugyan beitza, which is the first source on page one, correct? So, you're talking about something which your mesiach das,
the
dechia right?
Is your das, not your
right.
Your
so, for example, let's say you have something called pulin vadashin. Right, these lentils. Now, lentils can be eaten raw. Okay, that's called kosei sesadashim. Once you put them into a pot of hot water to cook them, they go through a stage in the middle where they're not edible. And nevertheless, the Gemara establishes it's not the same as Grogos Vitzimukim. Why? Because what's going to happen in an hour from now? I can already predict, that's how the Kolbo, again with the later interpretation of the Kolbo, I can already predict that with the termination of the cooking process, the lentils will be edible.
So can we say with a grogos?
There's no contingency plan. You know, that depending on whether it's a sunny day or not.
With the grogos, it's not the roof. It's your das. It's your das, it says.
Your mesa chadas, because you know, you can't ask the question, you can't know, is it going to be a sunny day? Go predict at what point, before Shabbos ends or after, you know, maybe after Shabbos ends, what point will this process of the heating, creating the raisins, and so when will that reach its fruit?
So another way of putting this is it depends on whether you can see light at the end of the culinary tunnel.
Right, right, exactly. I would say that your word see is the same as my word predict. Okay? In the case of Groger's Vitzi Mukim, I cannot see the light at the end of the tunnel. Because will there be light? Will there not be light? You know, again, you know, if Lu Yitzur, in a theoretical sense, you would have such meteorological certainty, you know, based on those who predict the weather conditions, that the sun will come out, it will be 80 degrees hot, or whatever, you know, degrees Fahrenheit or Celsius, and we know that these Groger's Vitzi Mukim will be edible, and if it wouldn't be mukim, even according to Rav Shimon's mode of Rav Shimon, the Groger's Vitzi Mukim. Now, if we're back on page 4, we can now begin to see some things in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Mishnah Brura, and then I want to point out the Tosfos Yeshayahu. So the Shulchan Aruch in Shin Yud, Sif Beis, tells us that Patzilei de Tamre, he doesn't use that term, Tmarim Alakutim, Koda Bishulim, you malakit them, you took them off the tree before they ripen the consum of some vesalim, and especially me alehen. Rav Hosei, now the word me alehen takes on new meaning, a new clarity. It means it's an automatic, predictable process. Or to use Michael's term, you see the light at the end of the tunnel. Muta liochamen kodem bishua. Avagrogos vitzimukim shemenichem osam bimukta liyabshon. That you absolutely push it away, waiting for it to dry by the, you know, be baked by the sun. Asurim b'Shabbos mishum mukta, and the Mishnah Brura is going to explain because we don't know. There's no vad. If there's no vadai, therefore meisiach daito alena. Let's look at the Mishnah Brura. The Mishnah Brura here is Simon Shin Yud Sif Katan Tes. He says regarding Gogus and Tzimuka on the second line, Sheinom ruuyim lachilat shiyus yavshu. He's meisiach das from the grogros v'tzimuk. Okay. Now, I want to point out to you the Tosfos Yeshayahu, which is on the side of the Gemara. And we're looking at the Tosfos Yeshayahu on Menhei Amud Beis in the Sugya of Grogos V'Tzimukim. So there the Gemara says that Patzili de Tamre is not Mukta. And it's not like Grogos V'Tzimukim. And the Gemara seems to be, according to Rashi, analyzing Patzili de Tamre from the perspective of Roy Lachilo or Eino Roy Lachilo. In other words, to what extent is Patzili de Tamre, unripened dates, similar to Grogos V'Tzimukim in that middle state before the sun is beating down? And one condition which has to be fulfilled in order to generate Muktzel or Rav Shimon and Ochlin, namely Dachi B'Yadayim, according to Rashi, seems to be clearly lacking. And the Tosfos Yeshayahu is very bothered by this. He says the following. Eino Nira L'Ri Pirish Zeh. The Ri doesn't like Rashi's Pshat. The Lo Dami L'Grogros V'Tzimukim. Patzili de Tamre is not at all similar to Grogos V'Tzimukim. So what was the Gemara asking over here? That was the Shaila of Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. Delo dachi v'yadayim. According to Rashi's understanding of Patzili de Tamre, where he's putting it aside, waiting for the maturity process to complete itself, there's no dachi v'yadayim. So what did the Gemara think? What was Rabbi Elazar Rabbi thinking when he asked the question that Patzili de Tamre should be equal to, analogous to, Grogos V'Tzimukim? V'nira li kipirish ha'aruch. You're a Nosan Bal Aruch, who came during that Tkufa between the Gaonim and the Rishonim. So we're really flying back in a time machine before the Rishonim. Piresh Patzili de Tamre, that the word Patzile, which Rashi interprets to mean unripened, means something totally different. Loshen Mifatzea. Does anybody know what Mifatzea means? Like, for example, in medical terms, in modern Hebrew, if the skin is opened by a wound, that's called what?
Split.
In Hebrew, Loshen Kodesh. Right. That's called a Tzia or a Petza. Petza means a crack. In medical terms, it means a crack in the skin. He says that this crack is a crack in the dates. What happens over here? Shemifatzim tmorim. Now, in my family, my girls are experts at this, they open the dates for one purpose? To look for bugs. But he says that there's a different reason to crack open the dates. He says, Shemifatzim hatmorim kedelehis bashel ulehis yavish. He says it's very interesting that by cracking open these dates, actually by hand, you know, it's a whole tedious process. Every date you take and you break it open, this will speed up the process of his bashel v'his yavich, where it ripens and dries up. But b'shas ha-ptzia, at the very moment that he actually opens them, miskalkalos, what does miskalkalos mean?
They get ruined,
as far as achil is concerned. The achar zman mishtabchos, then they improve themselves with time. And therefore, v'dami legrogos etzimukim. He says, now we begin to understand the analogy of grogos etzimukim. Rabosai, I should offer a present for the person here who can answer this question. What does the aruch, and the Tos Yishonim is supporting the aruch, what does he gain here over Rashi in explaining the Havamin of the Gemara Shaila about Patzili the Tam? No, what I'm saying, Rashi says it's Einam Espashal, therefore it's not Roy Lachila. What is the Aruch adding now?
It's Lachazim. It's really
good. No. Again, Mitch. Without the Aruch, what I have in Rashi is Lachazim. Again, the different dargis, you know, different, you know, quantities of lo chazu, whether it's equal to a good grogus tzimurga. It's not, and that the Gemara vacillates. But,
so now it's pushed
but remember, what was the, why did the Tos Yishon reject Rashi?
Because it wasn't pushed away.
Exactly, we were lacking the other condition of Dechiyah B'Yadayim. There's no tzushta, there's no comparison to grogus tzimukim. Ah! Says the Tos Yishon in the name of the Aruch, Patzile the Tamar means they cracked open the dates. And what happens immediately when you crack open the date? Immediately, what's the first repercussion? Miskalkalos. Later it's mishtalkalos. But right now, you know, you take a loss to get a gain. You know, it's like, I don't know exactly, maybe some of you can help me in business, but I assume there are certain types of business where it pays to take a loss because ultimately you'll get more of a profit.
Black Friday loss leader.
Black Friday, okay, good. We just had that, right? Anyway, so here in the case of Patzile, which would be Lush and Pitzia, immediately it's miskalkalos. But what did you do? You actively created the situation of miskalkalos. Is Mimela, I understand very well why the Gemara, Rabbi Lozer Rebbe, equated Patzile the Tamri with Grogus and Tzimukim. They both have both conditions. In the case of Grogus and Tzimukim, I climbed up to the roof and I laid them to bask in the sun. That's Dechiyah B'Yadayim, and now they're miskalkalos. In the case of Patzilut the Tamrei, and by the way, according to the Aruch, I don't even think these dates are necessarily unripened dates. I mean, they may be unripened, but they're still edible. But if you want perfect dates, I know pun intended here, but if you want a perfect date, what you do is you crack open the Tamar, right? Maybe your date's name is Tamar, I don't know, but and then it speeds up the process in which the Tamar become Mishtabchos, but the immediate repercussion, if you freeze that Keta, what do they call it in video terms? The frame, it's called?
Freeze frame.
Right, you freeze the frame, then what you have is a kilkel, so your immediate situation is But now, says the Tosi Shalim, I like the Aruch, because he gives you that second condition that justifies the analogy between Patsili the Tamar and Grogis the Zimukin, namely that it's Dachya B'Yadayim. Why does the Gemara reject it? So why is
Patsili?
So what's the answer? He says, Ach, Grogos v'tzimukim miskalkalos yoser mehem. Okay, so that's something we have to analyze, but just on a very superficial level, the maskan of the Gemara, this was Rebbe's response to Rebbe Lozaber Rebbe, that although both Patsil the Tamre and Grogos v'tzimukim are equal with regard to one condition, they're absolutely identical, they both have tefiya b'yadayim, but with regard to the second condition, namely whether it's royal achilu or not, there is some, shall we call it, nuance of the difference, in which the more radical lo chazi, the kilkul gomor, is appropriate as a description for grogos v'tzimukim, but in the case of patsil tari, even after you crack open the dates, it's still epis a little bit edible.
Is not definition
Mastriya.
Kilkul Gomor is
Mastriya,
and this is not
Mastriya. Not Mastriya. So that's what we have according to the Tosi Shon. Now here I want to spend a few minutes of your time before we say, depending on how much time you have, I wanted to say a few words about Hanukkah. But I wanted to develop this in the context of the sugya of Hazman, which I'm trying to find here. It should be on page 4. Let me just see. Just a second. Let me get myself oriented here. Beitza Chavav Hamid Beis. Okay. This is the last source on your page 4. You have it? Now, in the Gemara in Beitza Chavav Hamid Beis, we started, if you remember, with this daf on page 1, but we didn't get to emphasize and focus on one particular dimension of the sugya Beitz HaChavav and Beitz. The Gemara actually opens a window of an opportunity to allow eating grogos v'tzimukim on Shabbos and Yom Tov. And what's that? On the second line of the quote, you have it? You may want to underline the words, Ad sheyazmin mibaod yom. You have those four words? I have a pen if anyone needs one.
Where is it?
It's on page 4, the last paragraph. And in the second line, towards the end of that line, it says, Ad sheyazmin mibaod yom. Now let's just translate those four words. We've discussed on many occasions, especially when we talked about Beitza, the beginning of the Sefer Beitza, the word hazmana, the concept of hazmana. Hazmana means, whether it's verbal or mental, I don't know, but you make a declaration, at least in your mind, that you are going to eat this object. That's going into Shabbos, going into Yom Tov, you do an act of hazmana, in an active sense. And here, this braisa quoted in Beitza is opening up the floodgates for a hazmana, meaningful hazmana, with regard to grogos v'tzimukim. And the Gemara is going to have a problem with this braisa. And we mentioned this in the past. Can I take tsroros or dirt or evan, etziv havanim, which is totally non-edible, and say, well, I'm designating it for achila as we go into Shabbos? The Gemara says that's impossible. It's lo chazi. If it's lo chazi, then it's completely meaningless. And that's what the Gemara is going to object to in the case of grogos v'tzimukim. Why is the braisa allowing me to effectuate a hazmana in a meaningful way that could lift the iser mukta? And this you'll see at the end of line 3, idelo chazu. I would underline that. Idelo chazu ki azmin luhu mayavi. Since we understand that grogos v'tzimukim have sirachon, asriya, then the whole concept of hazmana is ineffective. My havi. Rashi, which is the last line on your page 4, clarifies this. Lo chazi lachil, it's not roi lachil, v'lo mahanya, it's not effective, lahu, for these grogos v'tzimukim hazmana. Why, the havi le kemazmin, etzim v'avonim lachila. It's like you designated Eitzim Vavonim. Are you going to eat Eitzim Vavonim? Again, it may be certain termites, you know, right? But we don't eat Eitzim Vavonim, you know. It could be a good thing for a dentist, you know, if somebody would eat Eitzim Vavonim, you know. But maybe it's a crude way of pulling teeth. I don't know. So he says, this is not edible. And if Hazmon is meaningless, you, who are you fooling here? In Yiddish we say it's a gelechter. Who are you joking? If you tell me there's Hazmon on Eitzim Vavonim, Grogus and Tzimukim is Eitzim Vavonim, it's Lo Chazu. So the Gemara gives a very interesting answer. And this is three lines above the end of page 4. Lo Tzricha, but what's the case of the Braisa? De Achzu Velo Achzu. Meaning they are Roy, but they're not Roy. You know, as we say in America, give it a break. Like, you know, what do you mean, it's Roy or it's not Roy? Like, take the choice. You can't tell me it's edible and then tell me it's not edible in the same sense. It's A and not A. So Gemara says the following. De Ika Inshi De Achzu. Now, I don't know what the Gemara means. Maybe a person's very desperate. Or maybe it means his taste, he's less of a mafuna. He doesn't have that pinuk, you know, and he'll eat anything. You know, he's used to the ration. You know, after I finished my basic training, for 2 weeks I packed Minot crop. You know, you talk about Daniel, what, you know, how they treated Talmud Chacham, you know, he shouldn't be cleaning up. Sometimes Daniel wants to save me. I like to help out here. But for what I did for 2 weeks in the army, that was not Kvod Talmud Chacham there. I was already 35 years old, but they didn't have any Kvod HaTeva. I spent hours and hours just packing Manot Krav. But if you eat Manot Krav, meaning for a soldier who's out there in the field, then I would guess the Grogus and Tzivuka might be a delicacy for him, right? So in any event, the Gemara says, the Ika, the Achli. There's some people who could tolerate eating the Grogus with Tzivuka. The Ika Inshi de Lo Achli. You know, I'm reminded of just Derech HaBdichusa. You know, Rebbe used to tell a joke before. So I remember on Tu B'Shvat, they used to give us boxer. How do you say it in English? Charuvim in Hebrew.
Carob.
Did you ever eat like raw carob from the trees?
It's really good.
You know, you like it. Oh, you see? The fuzzy way. I mean, we couldn't even tolerate the smell of it. And Michael loves this stuff, you see? So that just proves what we say is Al Tam Baref, Ein Lit Baker. We cannot debate this. And there are those people who enjoy Grogus and Tzimukim even before they're ripened. I would say it's even worse than boxer, but you know, there's some people eat it. V'ike inshi de loach. So you have the group that doesn't eat it. You see, the Gemara doesn't spell out where's the majority here. You know, I would have suggested, but we're going to see a whole literature on this question, maybe it's 50-50. I don't know. Where do the percentages fall in this case? Oh, says the Gemara, what do you do in such a case? Some people eat it, some people don't. Is that called Grogus and Tzimukim, is it not? And I'm going to read the Gemara's answer, and I'm going to ask you to tell me what you intuit is the Gemara's final position on Grogus and Tzimukim. Is Grogus and Tzimukim Roy Lachila or Eino Roy Lachila? The Gemara answers the following. Asmin, if he went ahead, then he designated it. Goli Daite, he revealed his das, that for him it's edible. Lo Asmin, but if he left, you know, he went with the flow and he didn't make any statement of any ruffle the feathers and say, well, I'm going to eat these Grogus Tzimukim even before they ripen. Lo Goli Daite, and therefore they're mukta. So what is the Gemara finally telling me about Grogus Tzimukim?
Only mukta without Hazman.
But wait a second. Let's look at the Shulchan Aruch that you have here on the same page. The Shulchan Aruch says, Abel Grogos Vitzimukim, right? This is like the third source on your page. This is Shin Yud Sif Beis. Grogos Vitzimukim, Shinich Vitzot, B'mukta liyabsham asurim b'shabas v'shemukta. Guess what? The Shulchan Aruch doesn't make any hesitation about this. He doesn't qualify and say, well, wait a minute, maybe this, maybe that. It's Roy, it's not Roy. Mazmin, Hizmin, Lo Hizmin, nothing. Or, for example, if you take a look again at the Tos Yishanim that we just learned together on Daf Mem Hei, he quotes Rashi in Grogus and Tzimukim, and he says that Grogus and Tzimukim is miskalkalos. And not only that, the Rambam that we spent so much time on at the beginning of last week says that the reason why Grogus and Tzimukim is mukta is because it's not Roy Lachila. So I would submit to you the following, Rav Osai, that the Gemara's final answer is that the Braisa is addressing a very unique case of Grogus Mitzimukin, not your classical Grogus Mitzimukin. If you ask me, you know, wake me up in the middle of the night, whisper into my ear, Grogus Mitzimukin, and I'll go like this, that's not edible. You know, that's Ein Roi L'Achila. But there are situations, maybe they're rare and far between, where the Grogus Mitzimukin go through a process, and the taka, some people would eat them. So again, what I would submit to you is the following. Your classical Grogos Mitzimukim, whenever you see Grogos Mitzimukim and you want to give a Talmudic dictionary definition of Grogos Mitzimukim, is miskalkalos, is sirachon, is ein roi l'achila, lo yo'il, lo hazmon is meaningless, and gandhi, ball game over. There's no ifs, ands, or buts in an unqualified way, Grogos Mitzimukim on Muksa, even according to Reb Shimon, and that's how we're going to pass it. But if you come up with a situation where Grogos Mitzimukim could be edible for some particular group that you isolate, you'll do a psychological, you know, test with various, you know, group, what do they call them, group factors and all that. So for that group, it's edible. So in that particular circumstance, hazmana would work. And you could remove mukta by doing hazmana. And why am I so motivated to say this? Because at the end of the day, I want to understand why the poskim codify the following halacha. Patzili d'tam, which you plucked off the tree before they ripened, and they're not really edible, and you're allowed to eat them on Shabbos and Yom Tov. There's no mukta. Grogos Mitzimukim are mukta. What's that all about? Why did Rebbe insist in his answer, in his retort to Rav Elazar of Rebbe's question, that Patzil the Tamri is not Mukta and Grogos Mitzimukim is Mukta? And especially according to the Tosi Shem in the name of the Aruch, that both Patzil the Tamri as Grogos Mitzimukim have what? The Chiyah B'Yadayim, if they both have the Chiyah B'Yadayim. So where and why is the distinction between the two? The Gemara tells us explicitly, and that's how it's paskin in the Shulchan Aruch and in all the later poskim, that Patzil the Tamri is not Mukta, whereas Grogos Mitzimukim is Mukta. The only answer I can come up with is that Patzili the Tamri, although it's not gishmak, it's not for my first choice to eat it, but it still is edible. But Grogos Mitzimukim, again, classic Grogos Mitzimukim, is not edible.
Is the Rova would eat them?
Maybe no one would eat them. Again, if somebody, you know, is stranded on an island, we're not talking about that. But Bola Daitzel Skum, there's no significant representation.
Whoa.
There's no significant group in the population that represents and forces us to the conclusion that Grogos Mitzimukim are edible.
Oh.
But now, what happens if I have a different Mitzius, a different situation of Grogos Mitzimukim? What happens if Grogos Mitzimukim on the market, and we ask the groups of people, is it edible or is it not? And what do you get? Two different answers. You have two different groups, the representation of those who eat the Grogos and not. Then Grogos Mitzimukim becomes like what? Like Patzil and the Tamre. And therefore the Gemara holds that Hazmana would be effectual in the case of Grogos Mitzimukim if you have these two different groups of people, because then Grogos Mitzimukim is not considered non-edible. So in the classical Grogos Mitzimukim, again, I'm just making Hazar Shir on this, which is what? Which is called Musrachos and Makul Kolos, and in the Rashi's language is Lo Chazi, and it's much worse than Patzil the Tamre. And to answer Evan's question, maybe there's one guy who's stuck on the moon, so he'll eat Grogos Mitzimukim if he has to, because otherwise he'll starve to death. That's Butler Daitel Tzikol Adam. That's Grogos Mitzimukim classic, and that is Mukta and Garnish Gehelfen. You know, you can yell Hazmana from now till you're blue in the face, it's not going to help. Patzili de Tamre is a whole different story. Patzili de Tamre is something that, you know, could be edible. Again, it wouldn't be, you know, if you had a chosher guest coming to your Shabbos table, I would not recommend taking out Patzili de Tamre if you ever want to invite him a second time, you know. But if, on the other hand, it's, you know, he wants it, you know, he decides that for him, Patzili de Tamre is edible, then Erchinami, it's edible. And that would be similar to the Grogus Tzimukim case where you have different groups. So if you have that kind of Grogus Tzimukim with different groups and some people find it edible, then in a chinami, it would be what? It would be subject hazmana. And if you determine, you know, you define yourself as belonging, you identify with that group of people that would eat patsu the tamri, or in the case of Grogus Tzimukim, not in the radical case, but in the unusual Grogus Tzimukim where there is a valid group that represents the wave the flag of edibility, it is edible, then hazmana would be effective.
One other question tonight, if they're going to be edible, I'm asking.
Okay, you're right. Eben's asking an excellent question. I don't know if Aaron, you're about to ask the same question.
But you brought down the Shulchan Aruch. We don't have the whole Shulchan Aruch in front of us. Just this.
Yeah, I know. I apologize for that.
If we saw,
I try to fit everything on page.
Saw the Gemara, but the Hazmana, it had to be Roy when you made the Hazmana, right?
Well, it's Roy for you, but not for me. In other words, I belong to the group that would never
Roy,
eat this.
It wasn't Roy at all. It says it's Lo Milsi, right?
Right.
It was not worth anything.
Right.
So assuming that there was some kind of a Royness, I don't know.
Right. There's a group that would eat it, right? A valid group, not just one crazy guy.
Is that brought down in halacha at all? Or
I don't know. Right now I haven't seen it. You're asking an excellent question. But Evan's question is more or less along your line. Evan's asking, well, wait a minute. If there's a group of people that eat this kind of Grogus Tzimukim, or in the Maskana of the Sagamore and Patsil of the Tamri, there is a valid justification to eat Patsil of the Tamri on the part of certain people, why do I need Hazmana? Maybe I have a right to say, look, I'm innocent until proven guilty. You can't force me to belong to the Mefunakim group that wouldn't eat these kind of Grogus Tzimukim. Okay, so that's fully nether where we want to pick it up next time. I just want to spend 5 minutes, and Michael, I'll come back to you, on Hanukkah.
Just before or after?
Oh, now's a good time if you want to. We'll have a little Hanukkah party here with some dry wine. And anyone who wants, sweet wine, you're invited to bring your own wine. All right. Rabosai, who's the hero, or who are the heroes of Hanukkah?
Yehudit.
Historically. Well, Yehudit for sure, you're right. But I mean on the male side of the equation. The fighters. What do we call them? The Chashmonaim, right? I want you to know, and it pains me to say this, but lo pashut. The Chashmonaim, according to the Ramban at least, do not have a great record. Maybe I shouldn't be motzi laz on the Chashmonaim, but what could I do? The Gemara says that every last vestige of the Chashmonaim, any descendants of the Chashmonaim, were completely wiped out. They were all killed
by Herod,
right? You were at the Museum of Israel, right? Yeah. The exhibit. But if somebody comes forward and says, "I'm a descendant of the Chashmonaim," he's lying. He's an Eved, but he wasn't in the lineage. Says the Ramban in his Pirush on Vayechi, on the pasuk Lo Yosur Shevet Miyehuda, why were the Chashmonaim wiped out? Because, and I'll quote to you the Ramban. He says, even though the Chashmonaim were Chassidei Elyon, the Ilmolei Heim Nishtakhu HaTorah VaMitzvos MiYisrael, Afal Pichei Nenshu Onesh Gol. Ki Arbas B'nei HaChashmonai HaZokeh, meaning the children of Matisyo, HaChassidim, who were great pious Jews, and if not for them, the Torah would have been forgotten. Molchu Zachar Zeh, they took over the kingship, and who are they? Kohanim.
Not from Yehuda.
Is naflu biyad oyveihem becharef v'igia onsham basof. And he quotes the Gemara Basra called Mishomer Shemotzo mivnei Chashmonai Eved Hu Shekol Zera Matisyo Chashmonai Hatzadik Nichras biavon ze Sheavru al tzavos hazoke. They violated the command of the Zokim and Yaakov Avinu, Lo Yosur Shevet Mi Yehuda Shemolchu V'lo Hayu Mizera Yehuda Umin Beis David. So Rabosai, I just thought that I would share with you an insight here of the sefer that I've begun to get attached to. My son bought me the sefer just a few weeks ago. It's called Vigadita, and it's a fascinating sefer. Again, I only recommend it to you if you have the patience. It's not, you know, you have to pick and find the jewels here. You know, it's like chit and shizar makarik. You have to pull out the good chit that are edible. So it's from Rav Yaakov Galinsky. When I saw his picture, and I read his Torah, I think he's like 6'4". You know, the man turns out to be like about 4'4" or something. He's very small. I've never seen him. You saw him?
Not many times.
How big is he? Is he really very short? Somebody told me he's very short.
Very, less, well below 5 feet.
He's well above 5 feet. Anyway, in my mind, I imagine this like giant. You know?
His famous smooth comments is when the World Trade Center destroyed, says, I'm taller than the World Trade Center. That was
great. Confounded. That sounds so... Tsugapas, you know, I would almost guess that I can hear him say it even though I never met them here. So he sees in this whole parish a whole different perspective, and it's a musav word for all of us. He says the following: what we have to take away from this whole episode of the Chashmonaim, on the one hand, their greatness, it's in their merit that we still exist as a nation today, but on the other hand, they blew it by taking over the Malchus. He says we have to take away from this a very profound musavart. And again, we don't have time to go through the whole thing. It's pages and pages. But I want to focus on one medrash that he has about Moshe Rabbeinu, and then see if we can swing around to his punchline, how this applies to the Chashmonaim. Okay? Moshe Rabbeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, comes and appoints him, or at least offers him the job of being the Moshiach Shel Yisrael. This is the Maisa Asneh. And Moshe Rabbeinu, if you remember, is running away. He's hiding his face. He even declares Moshe Rabbeinu, Shlach no biyad tishlach, send someone else. And Chazal says he's referring to whom? Aaron HaKohen, who was Misnabe in Mitzrayim before Moshe came. Omar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is in Tikkunei Zohar. And in Vayikra Rav, Im ein atah golem, if you're not willing to step up to the plate and become the Moshiach and the golem shall Yisrael, ein acher golem. If we have a principle, makom shein ish, if there's no one else to do the job, you have to do the job. But by me, it happens sometimes when there's no shliach tzibur. You know, I daven in Har Nov, I daven in what's called the Imre Shefer, that's the Tzanzer Minion Factory, and very often, you know, we're like, you know, 15 people sitting around, and no one goes up to take the amud. I'm not a bal tefillah, you know, that's the last thing I need. You know, I got enough. I don't have a good voice or anything nusuk, but you know, with 15 people sitting around, you know, in the chatirpa and tzibura, and everybody is on shpul because everybody's dying to get out of there. So I go up to the amud, you know, for makom sheni. So Moshe Rabbeinu is willing to take the leadership role because HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him there's no substitute. Then Chazal say the following: Go'olam. So Moshe redeems the people of Israel, takes them out of Mitzrayim. V'amad lo min atzad. Once again, he moves himself away. He gil yam, they get to Yamsuf. Omar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ata haremes matcha neteyes yod chal yom ubeka'eim. Lomar, Shim ein ata boko, ein acher boko. There's no one else who can split the Red Sea. Beko. So Moshe does the job. The Omar lo min atzad. Takes a backseat. Besinai. V'al Moshe Omar Aleil Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands Moshe to go up the mountain at Sinai and accept, receive the Torah. Lomar Shim Ein Ata Ole Ein Acherim. So imagine every step before he takes the leadership role for the Gula, he's Omei Benetzah. He takes the Gula, brings them out of Mitzrayim, Omei Benetzah. They get to Yamsuf, no one else can do the job. He splits the Yamsuf, Omei Lo Menatzah. They get to Har Sinai, Moshe is called in from the bullpen, as we say in baseball, and then Omei Menatzah. Nitztav lohakim esam mishkan vekelov, vehu Omei Menatzah. Omei Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ad mosai ato mashpil atzmecha. Ein Hashem metzapel lecha. You have to be mamid the mishkan, you have to erect the tabernacle. No one else can do it. And then vayikra al Moshe vayidav Hashem elav me'ol moed lemar. Moshe does the job. Says Rav Galinsky in the Sefer V'Ikarito, the Yesod HaYesodos that we have to take a musavah from this parsha of the Chashmonaim of Chanukah is Vahu Omid Lo Menatzeh. Yeah, but Makom Shein Ish, you know, if no one could lead the rebellion against the mighty Greeks, as the Maccabees call them, right? Then you have to come forward, Mil Hashem Eilai, and the Chashmonaim, the great tzaddikim, the Kohanim Gedolim have to take the lead. But as far as Malchus is concerned, we have capable people who can take over the Malchus. They are descendants of Shevet Yehuda, and they should be appointed as the Malachim. And the Musar, the Yesod, is very clear. We have to determine, each and every one of us, and have challenges in life, when it should be the Makom Shein Ish, and when it should be Vu Omid Lo Menatzad. It's a terribly difficult challenge in life. And the Chazal tell us that when, I mean, it's almost mefurish in the Psukim in Tanakh that when Shaul HaMelech, you know, the Navi Shmuel was looking for Shaul to appoint him as king, where was Shaul? Nowhere to be found. Vu Omid Lo Menatzad. And then what happens? When finally Shaul becomes the Melech, and now it's time to replace Shaul with David HaMelech, Shaul is after David to kill him. This is such a great challenge. The Chashmonaim now are basking in the light. The Akash Baruch Hu didn't create tremendous nes through them. They are looked up to, Mil Hashem Eilai, and the leaders of Klal Yisrael. But what they couldn't do, and where they failed, was Vahu Omid Lo Menatzad. But with that, we'll make a l'chaim yiratzon that we should all be zochet to fulfill the makom shein ish and come forward, take over the leadership role, but at the same time to understand when it's time to take a backseat for who omid lo menatzad and let others lead the charge. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Borei Pri Yagof.
Amen. Baruch atah Adonai.
Ah.
Hi.
Chaim Tov Mishalom.
So what do you do with Malchus Ephraim, and then I'm going to have Mashiach ben Yosef?
Right, so Rav Kook has a whole Mahalach on this, you know, that there are two functions of Mashiach, and in fact, these two dimensions of Mashiach were split into two different lineages, you know. And we're going to have to study that in Parshas Vayechi, exactly what's the role of Yehuda and his ancestors, and what's the role of Yosef and his ancestors. So, Od Chazon Amoed, the Mitzvah Hashem, will come back to them.
Alright
then, so for tomorrow we won't be here. We'll have a little bit of a Chanukah, I wouldn't call it vacation, there's no such thing as vacation from Torah. Anyone who wants to come, obviously, is invited. We'll pick it up next week. Next week in Mitzvah Hashem, we're going to move forward on Muktzah Ba'ochlim. We want to analyze this business about something that's Roy Lachil and not Roy Lachil. Some people eat it, some people don't. Hazmona works. Hazmona doesn't work. Patzil de Tamre, Grogus et Simukim. We'll finish that up in Mirtz Hashem. I'll have Marm Komus for you, Blineder. And then we'll go on to the Sugi Bali Chaim, where the Bali Chaim are Mukta animals. We'll talk a lot about Roy Laklovim and Omeid Laklovim. Remember those two categories. And I think we're just about over the halfway, you know, what do they call it in football, you know, past the halftime, you know, it's like my brother when he had his 60th birthday, so my nephew got up and he said, "Dad, you're not over the hill yet, but from where you are, you have a pretty good view."